sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter. On Lightmap, we have conversations and explore the culture of games and interactive media. You meet game makers from all around the world. And my name is Gianni. Thanks so much for joining me. My guest returns for another year to guide us through some of the best sounds of 2023. That's right, the wonderful Mina Shamali, composer, lecturer, and host of ABC Classics, the game show. Mina, thank you so much for joining me once again.
My sheer pleasure, Gianni.
We can't wait to find out what you've been working on this year and the games that you have picked for us to have a listen to. But before we jump into that, let's find out what's been making the news on Walkthrough, which is Sifter's weekly news podcast.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 28th of April.
Embracer is dead. The company will split up into three parts as CEO eats crow after the capitalist implosion reaches a conclusion.
Escape from Tarkov players are up in arms as developers introduce a $250 pay-to-win mode.
Fortnite will let you block those sweaty emotes with strangers that were just a little bit too mean if you want to.
And Fallout 76 hits a massive player milestone after the launch of the TV series.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website sifter.com.au every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
When we said that you were going to come on the show last year, I said, oh, maybe pick about 10, and you gave us about how many, do you remember, tracks?
12 million.
12 million, yeah. And so we thought we'd pare it back a little bit this year and went for 8. And how many did you give me?
8. I actually gave you 8 this time.
My friend, you gave me 10, in fact. So 10 different tracks from 8 games. So I think
Fine. Okay. No, I just meant 8 scores, okay? 8 games.
All right.
But there's a very good reason. Like, when you have those two extra tracks, there's a very good reason I offered that.
All right. Well, it does. I guess the ones you've picked have got a really nice variation. So there are some good examples in there as well. So, but before we kick off for that, for people who haven't come across your work before, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and the things that you've been working on in 2023?
So every week I get to talk about video game music on the radio, on ABC Classic, the game show. It's, you know, just gone through 6 years, 6 seasons. In community terms, that means a movie's coming next, but I'm actually going to a 7th year, so I'm really excited about this. Essentially, just an hour of really great video game music, you know, the big hits, the classics, those kind of new releases, and just some of those, like, gems that are hidden that maybe a few people have heard, but I just love to expose these wonderful soundtracks and creative composers to a bigger audience. And thankfully, it's not even just an Australian audience, it's an international audience because of the magic of online radio. And like, we live in a magical age, Gianni.
We definitely do. And what I love about the show as well is sometimes you're able to sort of pick out the gems in the soundtrack, in the score of games. And, you know, that may not even be the conversation about that game in games media, but you find really interesting things as part of that. But one of the other big things to you is you're actually put out a few games this year with your work on it, haven't you?
Yes. So it was a game I was working on for like 4 years, just on and off through pandemic, through a bunch of other things, Enchanted. And we finally, that game finally came out in March, and the score combines some of my favorite musicians from these lands, First Nations musicians, to go with the kind of First Nations themes that are displayed in the story of Enchanted. Alara Briggs Patterson playing double bass, electric bass, percussion, and Bilma, clapsticks. Kieran Ironfield playing Yidaki, also the name of the didgeridoo, and Eric Avery playing violin. And Eric Avery was one of those kind of dream castings for me, dream musical castings. It's like, oh, I really want to get that guy to play on the soundtrack. And then lo and behold, he did. It was amazing. And yeah, then I also worked with my wife and creative partner, Natalie Jeffries, on a soundtrack for a game called Every Hue of You. It's a visual novel. And just had a really kind of fun, lo-fi, chilled out vibe with a lot of really fun, dynamic ideas. It's where jewelry is enchanted with emotions. And then beyond that, I also get to do quite a bit of session music, doing some Middle Eastern vocals for the latest game in the Total War series, Total War Pharaoh. Composed by Ian Livingston and Ed Watkins, and I just basically got to sing throughout the whole score with a lot of kind of Middle Eastern vowels and even some slight ancient Egyptian language.
Which oh, really? Tell me more about that.
It wasn't really much. It's not that much in the score, but every now and then, Ed Watkins, one of the two composers, just asked me to say, hey, you know, can you do some kind of syllables as well as vowels, as well as these kind of like oohs and ahs? I was like, well, this is, you know, Pharaoh times. This is like old Pharaoh times. I'm going to find some ancient Egyptian poetry, ancient Egyptian prayers to pharaonic gods. And because I also come from the Coptic church, which uses the Coptic language, which is one of the ancient Egyptian languages. So I grew up kind of singing in that language as well. So I'd kind of like grab little bits that can feel relevant and can feel kind of universal to that era. And just kind of mix and match. And it's just a really fun kind of extra historical context that I felt very proud that I could bring.
It's so cool when you can layer all these little pieces in, you know, and then someone can listen to it at one level and there's all these other different levels that can be enjoyed as people go through. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to play a little bit of Every Hue of You because this soundtrack is definitely a vibe. Now let's talk about some of your selections that you have picked for this year. Kicking us off is an Australian-made game, one that has just been nominated for a Grammy Award in the second year that it has ever been run. And it's really interesting because the game and the music are one and the same. You can't really separate them. To say that this is a soundtrack is sort of selling it short. So let's have a listen to the first piece that you selected.
Like a boat lost at sea,
though I'm about to
with
end.
No sails, not a
you
breeze.
Still have your life ahead.
I am drifting cold waters, no star to be seen.
All things that lose again, there is no inertia in the ocean.
Incredible one. I just love that song. It kicks off really the whole game itself. It's one of the first pieces you see. Tell me a little bit about Adrift, which is Austin Wintory, and Montaigne, one of the opening songs of Stray Gods.
Stray Gods, the role-playing musical. Basically, this whole score, this really, it's really weird to call this whole score, this whole game, this whole experience, as you said, one and the same. Music, gameplay, interactive score. Just interactive storytelling, when you make a choice that affects the story, affects the song, affects the lyrics, affects the arrangement, the musicality, every part of it. And this is the opening song of this game. Now, Stray Gods, Greek mythology in modern day via murder mystery, a bit of film noir and musical theater. And that doesn't even describe the interactivity of it. And this kind of setting the scene, Laura Bailey and Ashley Johnson duetting, that's beautiful. Two of the most renowned actresses in video games. And this sets the scene, like, it's a fixed point, but it presents you with the first choice of the game towards the end. And I don't know, this whole idea of just having a score in a game that has this massive choice system that wraps through, and that means it's infinitely replayable, just it blows my mind. I remember when Austin Wintory was in town in September for this wonderful concert I got to present and host at Hamer Hall in Melbourne. It's called Indie Symphony, and it was put on by Orchestra Victoria, who performed throughout this whole score. Every time you hear a song and you hear strings in that song, that is Orchestra Victoria. If it's a score, if it's instrumental score, that's Nashville Scoring Orchestra, but Orchestra Victoria are always accompanying the vocalists beautifully. And so they put on this concert to celebrate indie video game music. And I remember Austin comes out, Austin and Tripod as well, who were the other songwriters on the rest of it, alongside Montaigne. And they come out, and I just say, Austin, Tripod, I have one question for y'all. What the hell? Like, just what the hell? How did you conceive of something like this? It's ridiculous. But this duet, just with the heartfelt writing of Montaigne. And I love the fact that Austin Wintry always says, man, I want to write lyrics, but they just do not come out of me. So he collaborates with some fabulous lyricists to make it happen. And Montaigne, top choice.
Yeah, incredible. What I think is really cool about Stray Gods is because it has such a dynamic, you know, choice-based soundtrack, when you go through, the songs are actually changing as you're playing through them. Austin's actually described that in a lot of the YouTube playthrough, there's almost like a musical notation where the choices that people make are actually described in that. So you can choose either red, blue, or green, and things are kind of marked as R, B, G, depending on the choices throughout the song. It's really interesting that the way that has kind of been translated to, you know, people to describe the choices, because every playthrough is completely different. So very, very interesting. And speaking of different, this song, that was sort of a beautiful ballady sort of song that we heard there. And you've got something pretty different as well from the same soundtrack. Tell me a little bit about this.
Yes. So Adrift features Montaigne. The other songwriters, as you mentioned, Tripod, one of Australia's, to me, premier comedy bands, but fantastic writers. It's so weird because I feel like comedy is one of the hardest things to do. It's maybe the thing that a lot of people do attempt to do, but to actually pull it off, that is not an easy thing, and it requires such exacting standards when you're writing. And, you know, the standards don't come better for me than Tripod, who are fabulous musicians, fabulous writers. And this piece, Challenging a Queen, where Laura Bailey's Grace, the protagonist, faces off with Persephone in her underground nightclub.
Three, is this thing on? Are you testing me with your coterie? Ogling expectantly, heads up, wrecking me won't come for free. See, it won't be easy, Persephone, when I use the moves I bring blessedly. Shadows don't scare me, see, I'll survive it. Maybe you want to do this in private.
You're lost, little girl. You're wasting our time now. The gall of a squeaking mouse in a lion's den.
Well, that feels very musical theater, like very, like you feel like you're on the stage with them in a way.
Yeah, and what I love about this is every one of those choices, the red being the aggressive, the green being the charming, and the blue being the clever, every one of those choices comes with a kind of signature instrument. So What you heard there, the electric bass being played by Alex Bukala, who also he also wrote this, the actual music here in the nightclub in Hell. He plays the electric bass, and he does a mean funky bass. If you've ever seen funk bass covers of video game scores on YouTube, this is the guy who does them. And you know, just Austin brings him along to represent the kick-ass choices. So if you choose the charming choice, the green path, that's Niall Wilson playing the harp. She's also known as Harpsona. And if you choose the clever path, you hear Andy Leonard on the clarinet. And it's a entire change of vibe, an entire change of instrument, change of key as well, and change of chord progression. Everything happens. And even here, you hear Grace start to rap and just take on a very different choice, which is really, it's really fun. And, you know, Tripod, this and many others just delivering on such a great level. And I knew the minute this game came out, this whole score, the minute I listened to the whole thing, I was like, yeah, this is going to definitely be nominated for a Grammy.
The bones of it feel like a role-playing game that you would have played, you know, a BioWare style role-playing game. But mm-hmm. you know, that's okay if you've got different lines to deliver. But when you're talking about all the different elements of that all being pieced together and those choices building up over time to different conclusions throughout the way through, it's like something, honestly, one of the most unique games that I've seen this year, probably one of the most unique games I've seen for a really long time.
It is beautiful. It is just absolutely beautiful. And just, yeah, the ambition is astounding. And this is what I love about video games, is that we have seen nothing yet in this medium. As far as we've advanced, we've seen nothing yet. And that just, this is a soundtrack that makes me excited about the future of video games.
All right. Well, from Australia, let's head over to New Caledonia with your next selection for 2023. Island vibes in there. I love that one. Tell me a little bit more about that piece, which is the main theme from Chia.
Yeah, that main theme from Chia, that's just a representation of this entire experience. I am very impassioned about really good creative cultural engagement. It's a really, like, through a lot of my work, that's been really a big point of focus. And I think sometimes people get worried, is like, wait, I can get creative if I'm not part of that culture. It's like, no. It's not even about, you know, oh, you're going to represent it badly. And it's, that's part of it, true. But honestly, it's just, if you play with a culture that isn't your own, often the results are boring if you don't go beyond kind of the known cliches, the kind of surface level stuff. And you might dive in a little deeper and be like, oh yeah, this is cool. But when you dive in really deep, I think it always shows. And there's a lot of play for collaboration. And this soundtrack, Chia, it's a magical story and a magical version of New Caledonia. And John Robert Matz, American composer, full collaboration and full kind of fellowship with the New Caledonian creative directors and the New Caledonian musicians, who are the voices you hear, the vocalists that you hear. And like, it's a choir of many people across the soundtrack singing in Drehu, which is the one of the main regional languages, the main indigenous languages, pre-colonial, because you also hear some of these songs in French. And to actually even think that a game can speak to its colonial history in this way, even without being confronting. Like, I'm all for confronting colonization. I'm absolutely all for it. But to have that just represent as like, well, this is where we are now. This is the conversation we're having. These are the languages that we speak. the history of those languages, you can look into that, you know, for better or worse. But it's represented in the kind of fullness of the experience of that culture. And just that is, before even playing the game, this was just special to me. And John Robert Matz, to me, he is one of my favorite composers and one of my favorite people, to be honest. Like, he, among the game composer community, he is probably the most gentlemanly. I don't know what if that's what it is, but like, if you meet him, if you ever talk to him, but this dude is just such, so respectful and so kind of scholarly in his courtesy. But at the same time, such a musical chameleon who can do anything. And I just love what he did here.
I love hearing you be a professional fan of music, Mina. It's really fantastic.
It's a fun thing to do.
Well, let's now move to a game that I think a lot of people would be familiar with because, I mean, everyone played it. Everyone played it and it won a bajillion awards. And you're going to give it another little nod, this one here. Down by the River, which is composed by Borislav Slavov.
That is arguably one of the main themes from Baldur's Gate 3, a name that is, I don't think, a stranger to anyone who's been anywhere near video games this year, or even across the past 6 years, that's been in development. I just remember just hearing so much about Baldur's Gate 3. I was like, I don't know what the big deal is, but I was excited because Borislav Slavov is a fabulous musician, composer. On a very personal note, he features the oud, the Middle Eastern lute, one of my favorite instruments in the
world.
Your
fave, yeah.
One of my favorites. He features it in this score quite a bit, and in his previous big score for Larian Divinity Original Sin 2. He just is a fan of that instrument, and I'm like, yeah, great. And hearing it in a fantasy context that is not even remotely Middle Eastern, I love that. And that's what I'm talking about. It's using an instrument from a different culture. This is not even about Down by the River. I'm just talking about Borislav and what he does. Using an instrument from another culture in a creative way that recontextualizes it beautifully. My God, that's that for me. Listen to how he uses instruments from different cultures, and that to me is a blueprint for how to do it. But Down by the River, my God, the amount of people who have covered this song, and just the amount of time I heard it, and how often we hear it in our own home as we play Baldur's Gate 3, my wife and I. It just never gets old. I don't know what it is. It's so catchy. It's so earwormy. We talk about Stray Gods being a massive achievement. Baldur's Gate 3 is just as massive in a different way.
In every single aspect of
the game. Yeah, absolutely. Down by the River, one of the strongest melodies of 2023.
You talked about the oud, and tell me a little bit more about some of the other instrumentation you hear in there that kind of makes it for a richer, more dynamic sound of a big multicultural world that Baldur's Gate 3 actually is.
Well, you hear a lot of medieval kind of tavern, kind of Renaissance instruments. The instrumentation here is just described as string instruments. So basically, you might hear a Renaissance lute, a European lute. You might hear a lyre. In fact, those are instruments represented in the game. Like if you become a bard, you can literally carry a lute on your back or a violin or a pseudo violin, like a medieval violin. For any history buffs, it's the viel or the VA, however it's pronounced. And just percussion that borrows from the Middle East and borrows from Europe. And I think there's also a Bulgarian bent, because Borislav and a lot of the instrumentals with which he creates these scores are from Bulgaria. So there is kind of an interesting Bulgarian kind of sense coming through. Especially I love the choir that you hear. because you hear multiple versions of a choir, but then in one of the main theme representations, you hear this like low choir. And it's just very kind of, it's just like, there is kind of that, it's a bit different to what you'd usually hear in a medieval kind of context, kind of reminiscent of the kind of the, those low male choirs in Lord of the Rings, but it still has its own flavor. I don't know if it's a Bulgarian flavor or an Eastern European flavor, especially Larian is also a Belgian studio. So I don't actually know where the kind of, I think the boundaries, the cultural lines or any of those kinds of things that divide, there's no division there. There is an orchestra, there's a choir, but there's also just instruments from across history and across multiple areas that are brought into the mix.
Well, it's interesting that you've paired these two songs right next to each other, because there's been a bit of controversy between this last game, Baldur's Gate 3, and the next one. But let's have a listen to this, because you've put them all equal. I know there's no ranking in this particular list you've made. Let's have a listen to the next piece you've selected. Bit of Peter at the beginning, you can definitely tell. Tell me a little bit about the piece you picked from Marvel's Spider-Man 2, which came out this year.
Yeah, Marvel's Spider-Man 2. Look, I'd barely played Spider-Man games growing up. You know, I just played a little bit of those early titles. But the 2018 Spider-Man was just on another level as a game, as an experience. And musically, yeah, it's a very cliche thing to say, and kind of the old joke now is like, it makes you feel like Spider-Man. And it really does. It's felt like actually flying through a Marvel movie. And, you know, this is the magic of what that meant at a certain time was just brilliant. And to actually feel that in a video game, to feel a superhero theme, a really, I don't know, I don't want to say legitimate, but a really kind of bona fide, genuine superhero theme. John Paisano, no stranger to writing superhero themes for Daredevil, for the Defenders, for the Marvel series, and also no stranger to video games at that point, because I think Spider-Man was his first, but I think it released it around the same time as Detroit Become Human, that he also scored. But he just knows how to command a superhero sound. And then when Miles Morales came around, and I was already kind of a big fan of Miles Morales at that point. Across the Spider-Verse, brilliant. And just the character was just very fascinating. I was like, after 60-odd years of Peter Parker, getting the Miles Morales take was just brilliant. And hearing the orchestra mixed with hip-hop at that point, brilliant. For me, especially as someone who is a fan of both, I love hip-hop, I love orchestra, I love quote-unquote classical music, and that's a whole other conversation. We're not getting into it right now. But that Miles Morales score with production by Boy Wonder, who's been producing for, you know, Drake, Nicki Minaj, for Rihanna, for Kendrick Lamar, it, to actually bring that into the, again, quote-unquote classical conversation, strike of genius for me. So when you bring those two characters together into the one game, and for me, you know, seeing how, like, you can feel musically when you're with Miles and when you're with Peter, and you can actually combine them into the one theme, greater together. I'm so into that. I'm so into that. And the traversal, like, I love kind of, you know, especially like, I prefer the Miles thing personally, only because it's maybe more novel in this
newer
space. Maybe, but it's just like, cause I love hearing a really good electronic drum kit or just electronic percussion mixed with traditionally acoustic sounds. And when it's with orchestra, it's just big and grand. And to really match them, it's not an easy thing to pull off. A lot of people do it now, but it's not an easy thing to pull off that well. And John Paisano with Ben Billions on this track and, you know, Boy Wonder and Miles Morales just really pulls it off well. And then the rest of the score, which goes into all these different directions with Kraven the Hunter and Venom and everything, that again, whole other conversation about what's going on there.
There's a scale of the Spider-Man games, which I think is, you know, really captured in the sound, isn't it? It just, you know, you're a small little person flicking around the buildings in New York, but it just feels massive and you feel like a massive ideal. And I think that's one of the things that I really think about. I think superheroes definitely tend to lean towards that way, right? But yeah,
sure.
I'm with you with the you know, the mix of Miles's feeling and all through that, it really adds so much to that character.
And I mean one of the most beloved games of the last several years is Hollow Knight, and this is a story of very tiny characters on a very grand scale. And what really kind of helps deliver that, what really helps bridge that for you? The music by the wonderful Christopher Larkin. Always want to give him a shout out. But that's, I think, that's really what music can do. It can elevate things. It gives you the scale and the stakes to me. Like performance, you know, vocal performance, acting, motion capture, art, everything does a hell of a lot. But I think for me, music is that thing that kind of like brings it in. Music and silence sometimes. Sometimes the silence is what really sells you on the... on a situation. So knowing when to provide which is fabulous.
Silence is something we love in radio. I love it when people include silence in something we've played out. It's really great. I love that, definitely. So when I'm playing a game, I totally get what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Let's talk now about a series that has been celebrated its 15th anniversary earlier this year and had a bit of a spiritual success or a sequel that kind of takes it back to the very earliest days. Let's have a listen to your next selection. So much about setting the vibe, isn't it, when you're in a game, in a world, when you're visiting that place. Tell me a little bit about that which is the Mirage theme from Assassin's Creed Mirage, which actually one of my favorite games of this year. Really enjoyed it because it was nice and short and just did what it was supposed to do. Maybe it's no Baldur's Gate, I can tell you that, definitely.
Look, I love a short game. Personally, this is just the very side note. This is like, I love it. I don't care about a game that goes on for long if it feels like it had to go on for that long. If a game feels padded out, I get frustrated. It's like, no, you could have just skipped this, or you've made all these side missions, quote unquote, optional. But it's like, no, but everything's gonna be harder if you don't. Come on, I get it. But sometimes when you've been at this for a while, you can see when a developer is really, or a publisher, I don't know who's at fault there, but when they said, oh no, we need to make it longer, we need to make it 60, you don't need to make 60 hours. 10, 20 hours, I promise you, is actually more than enough to tell your story. Now, surprise, surprise, I picked Assassin's Creed.
And you performed on this one as well, did you, Mina? Did you sing in this one?
I will not lie, I tried. I did reach out to see if I could. I was too late. But the wonderful vocalist you hear is Laith Sadiq, who is the artistic director of the New York Arabic Orchestra, who also feature across this soundtrack. And the composer, Brendan Angelides, his first video game is this. He's usually a composer for film and TV. And this is his first attempt at a video game, and he's done such a brilliant job. And again, this speaks to cultural engagement within a video game, especially through the music. Like, this man, Brendan Angelides, is not a Middle Eastern musician. I don't know what his experience is with Middle Eastern music, but the way he brings in his collaborators and co-composers, he lists them as co-composers on the tracks where they actually create their own parts. Just to me, this really, this also brings back the original spirit of Assassin's Creed, because that first game in 2007 set in 12th century Palestine and brings in all the different kind of faiths and languages from the region. And this is what I love here. You're in 9th century Baghdad, the capital of Iraq, and the last few Assassin's Creed soundtracks featured a lot of vocals and a few lyrics. Actually, vocals across Assassin's Creed is always kind of one of those integral parts. But, you know, in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, you hear these Nordic vocals by Einar Selvik from Vardruna, the Nordic, the modern Nordic traditional band. Before that, you heard the flights kind of incorporate ancient Greek, literally the Greek Odyssey in Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And that's just beautiful to be able to actually hear that. And that's not even talking about the diegetic music, the source music that you hear when you're just walking around and there's street musicians or in other places. That's a whole other album by a whole other composer, Nima Fakhrara. That's a separate thing. But on this score, to actually hear Arabic being spoken, and those words, those two phrases, Aina Baiti Man Ana, where is my home and who am I? They're just at the core of what Assassin's Creed's about, and that's why I picked the second piece from this score.
Some people, but a slightly different version of that than we have heard in the past. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, Ezio's Family, the 8 most famous notes in video games, in my opinion anyway. But the theme that you first hear in Assassin's Creed 2 in 2009 by Jesper Kyd, iconic and has come up to several Assassin's Creed titles since. And, you know, it's kind of the de facto Assassin's Creed theme, even though every game has its own theme that is not this one. But it's like, nah, we can't part with these eight notes. But this is the first time, as far as I'm aware, I don't think there's ever been lyrics to it. And to hear those same two phrases in the main theme, where is my home and who am I, to actually hear it now on this beloved piece of music, I think hits home in a different way. And to hear Laith Sadiq just sing, he's also the violinist you hear across the score, the solo violinist. He's the director of the orchestra and he's also the violinist and just a brilliant vocalist. And I really want to be him when I grow up.
You'll get there one day. I'll be there to have a listen to you. Speaking of games that have an incredibly long lineage, we've got one that's even older than 15 years, and we're right back to the number one on this next one that you've selected. Your mum, you were playing Mortal Kombat back in the 90s, she probably would have said, get that out of my house. I don't want you to touch that. Where did you get that from? But if you played her that, she might quite like that.
What I love about this theme, and Mortal Kombat, this is the same composer from Mortal Kombat 11, Wilbur Roger II. And this is a composer who's worked across multiple different games, Call of Duty World War II. He worked on Star Wars, The Old Republic back in the day. Such a magnificent, he's also a sound designer. He also makes virtual instruments and sampled instruments for composers to work with. He is a brilliant, brilliant presence in this world. And I think what I love about this score and this theme in particular, not only does it have instruments from all around the world, and just kind of like slips in and out of kind of cultural fun, it's that this theme feels fun. Feels like it has, to me, it has the spirit of that original Mortal Kombat theme. You know, that really catches, like, it's like da 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 da, that, you know, something about this theme being is just like da 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 da. This, like, it's a very memorable, very singular melody. He's not going to try to give you something. So he's not giving you John Williams. He is giving you Mortal Kombat. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's Mortal Kombat on a massive scale.
Well, it's just cool to look at all the instruments listed out in front of me. All of these different. We've got oud. We've got in there. We've got pipa. What's a pipa or piper?
It's a Chinese instrument, sort of like a Chinese lute, but that's a very reductionist.
Okay. A stringed instrument of some kind.
Yes.
Yeah. Taiko drums as well. You know, we've got lots of other really cool things.
There's also, I think, something that I couldn't find in the credits, but you see in the behind the scenes video, someone's playing an erhu, which is a Chinese fiddle. And also the composer himself, he loves to get his hands dirty with instruments. He bows his electric bass guitar as if it were like an upright bass. But...
It's such a move when people do that, don't you reckon?
It's fabulous. It's so fabulous. It's just very beautiful and aggressive along with the orchestra. But he also plays the electric guitar that you hear in that statement of the melody.
It's phenomenal. You can just imagine the spines being ripped out as you're listening to this, to that particular piece of music. Haven't we come such a long way? I've definitely noticed a bit of a theme this year, Mina. There's definitely some beautiful vocals all the way through everything that you've selected. And this next one is no exception.
Just talking about how long a game can go for, and Vemba is proudly a short game, but delivers so much beauty. And so here's the thing, Vemba has something in common with GTA in this case.
Yeah, go on.
Because so in Vemba you steal cars. No. In Vemba, as in GTA, most of the music actually comes through the radio.
Oh, and really?
The story of Vemba crosses multiple decades of this kind of migrant family and how it's a story being told through food. But as you're cooking, as you're putting the food together and kind of piecing together this these recipes from the remains of those recipes that were handed down to you, you're going through different decades. And so the composer, Alpha Something, that's the name. That's literally the name, Alpha Something.
You didn't forget it.
No, I didn't forget. Yeah, and I love that. I have to clarify that. It's like that game company.
Yeah.
It's literally called that game company. But no, Alpha Something crafts these pieces of music that you hear on the radio as you're cooking that are inspired by different eras of Indian cinema, of South Asian cinema. And in this piece, the vocals you heard, Divya Vivek and Harish Kumar, just gorgeous. It's just one of very different styles. It's very diverse, this soundtrack, this collection of music. And I do not hear enough Indian vocals in video games, and I think that needs to change. And Indian instruments in general, because, again, this is one of those things where I have heard many bad attempts by composers who are not of Indian descent to emulate Indian an Indian sound, and it just it's a caricature, it's a musical caricature, and in this case, this is the furthest thing it can be. And Alpha Something is of South Asian origin himself, so so I am very aware of their connection and the musicians they play. Like, you cannot fake that kind of authentic South Asian vocal styling, and it's beautiful.
All right, well, now we're up to our final selection of the pieces, and this is one that you haven't played on the radio for me despite asking a few times now, but we will play it here today, and I'm sure a lot of you will be taken transported right back to the moment where you first heard this when you were playing this earlier this year. How do you follow up a game like Breath of the Wild, which was incredible, with Tears of the Kingdom, and just knock it out of the park?
I don't know what it is about Nintendo. There is some Nintendo magic that happens. Now, truth be told, I have not played Tears of the Kingdom, so I know.
That's why you haven't
played
it. Of course you would have. You would be straight on there every single week.
Oh, man. Now, if that were the case, what you hear on the radio would be very different. But I think there's some... Okay. So I was mentioning John Williams earlier, right? The thing about John Williams is that as memorable as his themes are, if you try to play them on the piano, for me, I usually play things by ear, but those melodies have some very specific, like one or two notes won't be where you expect them. And so you'll kind of try to play it by ear and be like, oh no, it's actually this note. It's actually this note. He's done this thing. He's done. And I think that's what happens in this theme specifically. Da, 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 da. Like those notes kind of land in different places than you'd expect. So the fact that they give you what you expect, but then play with it just enough to throw you off, I imagine is representative of the game.
Oh, absolutely.
You've clearly played it. Like, oh, they've given you Breath of the Wild with enough unexpected things to be like, ooh, I can. And I think that's the same thing with the Spider-Man 2, you know? Spider-Man 1 and Miles Morales with enough new stuff to kind of be, to just not let you settle, not let you feel kind of complacent or feel too comfortable. Being like, oh yeah, I'm just doing the things like, ooh, I'm doing this new thing now.
So much of Tears of the Kingdom is about revisiting places and time has progressed. So you actually go back and you can feel a lot of those like key themes within the music, those those elements that make it work. And then there's layers upon that, or the instrumentation has changed, or, you know, all of these bits and pieces. And it's really like, okay, well, you know, this is what you knew, but now it's different and things are different. And that's all about what that game is. So,
and that's what Breath of the Wild was, though, because even musically, when you visit some of those locations, like particular temples, you might hear a broken version, like you might visit a broken temple and hear a broken version of that theme from Ocarina of Time. You know, this, I think that's the whole ethos of Zelda. You know, it's, and you know, there's been countless takes at this point of the story, of that central story, and just like remixing and reshuffling and giving you a new version of it and a new way to approach it. And that's what the music has been. You know, you don't need to, like, as iconic as that original theme from 1986 or 7 was, you don't need to keep hearing it. That's why that original Zelda theme stands on its own. The Ocarina of Time theme stands on its own. Skyward Sword stands on its own. Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom both stand on their own. And composers Manaka Kataoka, Masamiyoshi Masato Ohashi, and Tsukasa Usui, just beautiful work across the whole whole score. To feel that it's a worthy follow-up of one of the biggest games of 2017, and just the most, it's that, you know, it's Tears of the Kingdom, Baldur's Gate, those are the kinds of games that people play and then walk into, like, game developers will play and then walk into a meeting. It's like,
make me so a Zelda.
I played Tears of the Kingdom over the weekend, and I think we should make it again.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. It's like definitely game development changed after Breath of the Wild, right? You saw so much of that influence come into all the games 100%. That we played. I think we had Horizon Forbidden West on the list last year when we were talking about that. And that was a game, an open world game that existed before that. But still, the next one was so inspired by that. Baldur's Gate is going to be exactly the same in a couple of years' time.
See. How many Baldur's Gate clones are we going to... Not clones, inspirees.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see, because some of those things about those particular projects is, you know, they've managed to hit the target in a way that is nearly impossible to do. You know, and I think, you know, I've seen some developers talk about, like, it's hard to compare against those projects, which are just at a scale that is beyond that, what most developers can create. But some of those key things, I think, will come back. You know, and just like the themes that we hear and they get repeated throughout Breath of the Wild and throughout Tears of the Kingdom, if you know they're there, you'll notice them. But if you don't, you'll just enjoy the whole piece altogether. So, yeah,
sure.
It's definitely one of my favorite. I'm glad we got to put that on your list of 2023's selections.
That was 8 soundtracks in a stacked year for video game releases. This was killing me, because this could have been at least 80 scores to go with. But there's just so much. So, well, I'll say this. The reason I chose these 8 were kind of for the delight factor. I felt like these are very delightful moments in 2023, which has been a very hard year for a lot of people. And for people to, you know, to be able to experience something like a fully interactive musical, to experience the biggest D&D game, like the biggest scale D&D game with the most beautiful melodies, or to visit New Caledonia or be transported to South Asia. All these kinds of, those are maybe those, that's where I kind of felt the delight factor, right?
Mina, it's been all another super duper fun journey back through music for 2023. Where can people check out all your stuff if they want to find out what you're working on in 2024, which we're almost at, in the coming year?
So my website, minashamaly.com, MeneshaMaly. Otherwise, you can find me at Musophrenic on social media, MusoPhrenic. Basically, just look me up on social media, whichever platform survives the social media apocalypse. And on ABC Classic, the game show, coming back in 2024. Is there anything else? Yeah, I think that's
that'll do it. Weird. That'll do it for now. Do what I do on the ABC Listen app and just hit subscribe or follow on that show, and then you can just load them up whenever you're ready to go. Have a listen. I often listen to the game show when I'm out mowing the lawn. I don't know why. It's just my thing. I like to listen
very
to.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
You know,
It makes sense. It makes sense because video game music often exists with competing with a lot of sound effects. So the barrage of lawn mowing noises. Seeing how the score stacks up against it would be interesting.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Good stuff to do out in the garden. Sifter is produced by Fiona Bartholomeus, Daniel Ang, Chris Button, Courtney Borrett, and Adam Christou. Mitch Lowe is our senior producer, and my name is Gianni DiGiovanni. I'm the executive producer. Thank you for joining us again for another year of amazing, cool, interactive video games, people just making awesome stuff. We really appreciate you spending the year with us and checking that all out. So if you like what we have done at any point, I'd ask you, if possible, could you share it with a friend if you think it's cool, if you like what we do? It's one of the best things you can do. As Mina sort of alluded to, the social networks have kind of disappeared into a black hole of destruction recently. So you telling a friend, honestly, has such an amazing impact. You can't even really measure it, how good it is. So it does make a big difference. Join us on all the socials. We are there at Sifter HQ. If you would like to follow us, we do post everything there, or come join us on Discord as well and talk about the cool things you're playing, the cool things you're listening to. That's sifter.com.au/ Discord. I just want to let you know we've got a few cool things coming for you over the little Christmas and holiday break. We've got an extended interview with the team at Stray Gods, Austin Wintry, Tripod, and Montaigne, as well as Liam Esler. Join me for a long conversation about that. That one's just exclusive to podcast listeners. You just have to listen to that one on your podcast player on your phone, most likely. We're also going to have our Games of the Year for 2023 over on Drop Rate, our review podcast, and heaps of other cool stuff as well. So keep an eye out that. We'll post all of that on our website, sifter.com.au, and we will see you on the other side of the new year. Until next time, have fun.
Hi, Chris Button here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Unicorn Overlord might have a strange name, but don't dismiss its tactical prowess.
It uses a tactics mode, and which is similar to the Gambit system that was in Final Fantasy XII for your squad mates. And you can say, okay, well, you know, Hodrick, who's my legionnaire with the big shield, I want him to prioritize protecting the back row. They're going to take the most damage. If they take a physical hit, they're going to go down, but I need them to be protected. So you can get quite granular with this, and I reckon you could build some pretty wild builds that are totally game-breaking, but it's kind of the fun of the tactical squad-based gameplay in Unicorn Overlord.
Tune in to Drop Rate to find out why Unicorn Overlord might just be one of 2024's sleeper hits. Available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.